Texas Talk Radio Leader, 760 KFNB presents It's Your Money and Your Life. For the next hour, Richard Muzio and Joe Vecchio will educate and inform you on matters related to your financial future, your life, and your leisure. Now, with It's Your Money and Your Life, here are Richard and Joe.
All right, good evening, everybody. My name is Joe Vecchio, your co-host, announcer, and producer, coming to you live from La Valencia Hotel with It's Your Money and Your Life. We are reaching you with 50,000 watts of power. We're heard not just in San Diego County, but Orange County, LA County, up the coast of Seattle on a good night out to the desert. And time to introduce the main man of the hour. He's a CPA extraordinaire, a competitive marathon runner. He is a core member of Strategic Trusted Advisors Roundtable, and he's a family office expert to several high net worth families. And his name is Richard Muzio. Richard, good evening on this wonderful Saturday night. How are you?
I'm doing great. I've got the sunset suite tonight.
Oh, you
here
do?
At La Vie.
Wow, yeah. That is fantastic. So
I'm getting up early to run a four-mile race that starts just down the street from the hotel.
Oh, is that
tomorrow morning?
That goes from La Jolla to PB, correct?
The end of summer, four-mile run. Finishes in PB. Then I have to take a bus back to, or maybe I'll just run back. It's only another 4 miles.
I'll see you at the finish line for the festivities.
I know, so I'm not going to see you on the way.
But anyway, hey, how about that Little League team from East Lake, right? They're saying Chula Vista, but I think it's technically East Lake, right?
They won, but Mexico gave the game away in the international final.
Well, against Japan, but I guess tomorrow we're in the World Series finals again, correct?
Yeah, but it would have been cool if we could have played Mexico.
Well, that would have been cool, but hey, just to get in there. Now, they've got a kid 6'4". What is the Little League rules? You got to be 15 and under?
No, it's 12 and under, but 12. Some of the kids are 13 because the cutoff is July 1.
13 and 6'4 and 3.
Most of the kids are 12.
Okay. Well,
most of the kids are 12.
I hope
the last kid to be driving and shaving was that kid from New York when they beat Oceanside.
Well, wait till he hits 18 in his growth spurt. I mean, this guy is going to be the next Bill Walton probably. Who knows? But anyway, down in the lobby tonight in La Sala Lounge, we have the wonderful Amelia Browning Trio. If you're hearing some great music in the background, that's who it is. Live music here, great music every night of the week, 6 to 9 o'clock in La Sala Lounge in the legendary La Valencia Hotel. And another neat thing happening in La Jolla tomorrow, Richard, and this should interest you because it does deal with tennis and rock and roll. It's Eric Sage has a book signing at Warwick's. And you know who he was, Eric Sage?
He was Bay City Rollers, right?
That's correct.
Okay, that's how much I didn't know he was a tennis pro.
Yeah, and they had a number one hit song called Saturday Night back in the day.
Right.
And apparently he was a tennis pro who taught many stars such as George Clooney, Alec Baldwin, Robert Downey Jr., et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, I've seen Robert Downey Jr. play tennis. He didn't teach him very well. Sorry.
As long as you get paid, what's the difference? Hey, it'll be at noon tomorrow at Warwick's, and the book is The Magic Key to Tennis, 1 through 10 System. So if that sounds like something you want to do, come over to La Vie, have a little brunch or something.
Hey, I love tennis books.
Yes, you do.
Hey, I just wrote one.
Hey,
that's right.
Hey, nice segue, Richard. How about that? What's the name of your book?
So What's Your Play? How Billie Jean Bobby and Blindness Begat Tolerance.
Wow. That's
September 10th, the official release date.
We
go back in time to 1973.
That is correct. I love to keep reminding people, you were the 14-year-old.
I was the 14-year-old scrapbook maker for Bobby Riggs when he was playing Margaret Court and then Billie Jean King.
Right. Mm-hmm. So the great first match happened in Ramona. Of course, you were lucky to go to both matches, the big one in Houston.
It was neat stuff. But we've got a documentary airing on PBS, making its debut on PBS on September 10th, too, where you and I were consultants to
this
project.
We were consultants and catalysts and provide a lot
and
of
all kinds of things.
And
the Margaret Court
Researchers.
Footage. And the Margaret Court footage that's going to be in that PBS documentary. We're the ones who found it.
As a matter of fact, September 7th, our show before the PBS show is going to be entirely dedicated to your book, that match. We're going to have Chuck Lemonager here, who was the executive vice president.
And Billie Jean King interview and our James Erskine, producer of the film.
Right. So we interviewed Billy. She won't be live that night, but it's a great interview, so stay tuned for that. Anyway, time to turn some attention to La Valencia and some of the great things here. We have in studio Tammy Wong, the wine director for La Valencia, with another great wine that we're sampling this evening. So, Tammy, how are you tonight?
I am fantastic. Thank you so much for having me again. It's a particular honor to share it with Norma. That's
always a pleasure.
This book looks really amazing.
So you talk, I'll sip. Go for it.
Okay. So tonight we are featuring the 2009 Elk Cove Chez Vineyard Pinot Noir from the Willamette Valley in Oregon. Mm. And this wine is special because you can only buy it at the winery and here at La Vie because Elk Cove sponsored me when I went to Oregon Pinot Camp last year, and Shirley, the national sales director, I asked her.
Pinot Camp? Can you tell us about Pinot Camp?
Oregon
I want to know about Pinot Camp.
It was magical. So you have to be Shirley nominated me, so you have to be nominated, and then you have to be invited, and then you have to be one of the first 270 people to accept. So it's 270 people from around the world. I met a Swedish guy and people from New York and Hawaii and all over the place. And you pay for your transportation there, and then they put you on buses and they drive you around to the vineyards, and there's seminars about soil and their white wines, and you meet all the winemakers, and it was one of the neatest experiences that I've ever had.
So
it was just
how does a young lady like yourself get to become a wine director of a place like this? You must have, I mean, you must go to school.
Do you drink a lot?
I've been known to have a glass of wine here and there.
But I mean, you must have studied very
well. Yeah, I just, you know, the story is that I was working at the Third Corner in Ocean Beach. I was the first server hired there. And my GM, Alex, handed me a crate of white Burgundy and said, here, take a book, take a spit bucket and a tasting grid and check it out. And the light went on. It was eight different Chardonnays, all from the same tiny little area in France, but they were all completely different. Mm-hmm. And I've really not been interested in anything besides wine since. I'm a little boring sometimes if you don't like wine. But I've just studied and read and drank and I've had some great mentors, and we have a really great wine community in San Diego. There's a number of tasting groups and some really great people like Lisa mm-hmm. Redwine at the Shores and Brian Donegan, formerly of Market, and Maurice from Island Prime are all supporters and mentors and.
And when Café Le Roux finally is on display and in service for everybody to enjoy, there's going to be a large wine collection on display.
Absolutely.
There, right?
Absolutely. My vault is going to hold 300 bottles. It's going to be all glass near the entryway. We're fashioning our list to West Coast focus because international people, when they come to California, they want to drink California wine. Mm-hmm. So Oregon is, being in the West Coast and making some of the best Pinot Noir is part of the focus of the program, and we'll certainly have French wine and Italian wine and Spanish wine, because you have to have a complete program.
You know, you ought to call up the La Jolla Playhouse folks. Isn't Sideways playing there right now?
That would be neat. They should come here and drink Pinot. Should come here and drink this Pinot, because you can't find it anywhere else.
Get hold of Lauren on Monday.
Absolutely.
To work on that. So.
Well, the other fun thing that we're doing is the captain's list, and in order to fashion a new program, we have to move out some of the older stuff. We have our cellar goes back to 1976. We have a deep cellar. We have a 20-page wine list. This is the place to drink wine. Mm-hmm. And with our captain's list, I've chosen a few things that are, they're ready to drink. There's some 99 things and some back vintages that need to be drunk. Mm-hmm. And this captain's list, it's just over wholesale. So you cannot buy wine cheaper or drink it in a nicer place.
There
and we're still celebrating Summer of Riesling. So we have some really nice Rieslings that you can get a really good price for and just experiment and check out.
And I know Chef Daniel's busy tonight, but how about another plug for October 11th and the large?
Oh, yes, the Heavenly Hog Fall Pig Out.
Right.
That is going to be spectacular. I cannot wait. We have 9 different chefs coming. Each of them get a different cut of the pig that we are going to get from Cook's Pig Farm in Julian. Mm-hmm. And they're going to be stationed throughout the hotel. And Nate from Toronado will be doing beer pairings, and I'll be doing the wine pairings. We have, I think it's 75 tickets, I think.
75 tickets, that's
75
right.
75 tickets.
I had a couple friends sign up, so I think you guys might be half full already.
Oh, please, yes. Yeah, brownpapertickets.com.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is the website for
or contact lavalencia.com. I'm sure they could. Or call the hotel. I'm sure they'll
lavalencia.com. We will guide you the right direction.
That is great. So Tammy, wonderful, great to have you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Keep bringing the wine. It's warming up my whole innards right now, and it's wonderful. So Dan, let's take a little break right now. We'll come back with more of It's Your Money and Your Life with our special guest, the first woman on the New York Stock Exchange. Stay tuned. All right, we're back with another segment of It's Your Money and Your Life. I'm here with Richard Nuccio, myself, and we've got a really terrific special guest tonight, and I'm going to let Richard introduce her.
Well, tonight we're going to break down some walls, which is the name of, well, it's almost the name, it's breaking down the walls. Norma Jaeger was the first woman to work on the New York Stock Exchange floor. Was that 1961 or 1962, Norma?
1962.
The first woman to do that, and she is our guest tonight. She's here fresh off of a book signing Barnes & Noble in Calabasas, came down from Encino, where it was only 103 degrees today, did you tell me?
103 when we left.
So you'll enjoy your room at Lovely La Vie, because it, I don't think it got over 73 today, and it won't get lower than about 67 tonight.
May I read the subtitles? 50,
go ahead.
50 courageous and successful years at the forefront of the women's movement. So, and Richard, you're definitely tied in with this, with 1973 and all that.
But yeah, I mean, how many guys you know who wrote a book about the history of the women's liberation movement circa 1973?
So this is great to have Norma here. It's everything is relevant tonight.
Yeah, it is. So Norma, welcome. Thanks for coming down.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
And why on earth did you want to be on a stock brokerage floor with a bunch of guys 50 years ago? I'm just curious.
Well, you know, I came down to the fact that my husband was not earning a living. I had to work. I was a mother. I was a homemaker, but women didn't work at that time, and so I wasn't a secretary. If you weren't a nurse or a school teacher, there were no jobs available for women.
But what attracted you to the financial field? Was it a parent, relative, or somebody give you a little bit of inspiration in that direction?
Well, I heard that Hornblower Weeks, a friend of mine, mentioned they were starting a training program for stockbrokers, and they were interviewing. And I applied, not knowing that there were no women in the brokerage business. Just went in like a dumb person, and I said, I'd like to apply for this job. And they interviewed me, and they said, well, you have to take 3 days of testing, psychological testing, to see if you have an aptitude for this type of business. And I did very, very well.
Mm-hmm.
And so the manager called me in, and he said to me, you know, we've never hired a woman before, and we don't know what to pay you. So I said to him, what do you mean you don't know what to pay me? You're paying all the other trainees. What are they earning? She said, well, they're men with families and so on. I said, look, I'm working because I need the job. And I have the same expenses.
I have a family, too. Hello.
Yeah. I have the same expenses, you know. And I said, in addition, I have one more expense. Mm-hmm. I have to hire a wife.
That's right.
Well, he almost fell off the chair. And he said to me, you know what? I never thought about that.
Mm-hmm.
You got it.
So
and that's how I get equal pay.
You got equal pay?
That's how
good.
I got it. You know,
because
you got to have, in Jewish we call it chutzpah. You got to have chutzpah.
Yiddish, of course.
Yeah, because I'm in a profession right now, the CPA profession, where women make 78% of what men make for comparable positions. That's in this year, 2013.
Mm-hmm.
It's not right. Especially now that 61% of the employees in the profession are female.
So you became a trainee, and?
And I had to, they told me that I had to earn a commission because I was working for part salary, part commission, and eventually be all commission. So they train you to cold call, to go through the buildings and so on and so forth. And I did very, very well.
You were in New York, or where were you?
I was in New York.
I started
in New York,
okay.
Yes, near Wall Street.
So how many years from that point to getting your seat on the floor, how many years did that take?
No, it wasn't that long, because one of the training things that you have to do is go through every single department in the firm so that you know how to operate a brokerage firm. You know, where the orders come, where they go, how they go on the
Everything
floor.
Everything was paper back then, wasn't it?
It was all paper, and it was party lines. Party lines. I had to get a quote for a customer, and I said to him, just a minute. And we sat and we waited for the next person to get off the phone for my turn to get a quote. So
I hope we were only two on the line.
That's good.
No, we were not. Anyway, and that part of my training was to go on the floor and stay at the booth for the firm. You know, the firm had a booth down on the floor, and you had to learn what they did down there. And then we went into the margin department. We had to learn how to evaluate what the assets were and how much the buying power was. So I learned every department in the brokerage business, which was very valuable to me, because when I moved to California, I eventually opened two brokerage firms myself. And if not for that training, I could not do it.
Were you the only female trainee?
Yes. I was the only female in the whole firm. I was the only female on Wall Street. I didn't know of anybody else.
Now, how much? I just saw 42 about Jackie Robinson. Have you seen that yet, Richard?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. I saw it. I didn't really like it.
Yeah.
It wasn't realistic.
Well,
I thought it was.
Yeah.
I thought it was.
I don't want to get into doing a movie review, but obviously he did endure some bigotry. I'm just wondering, you know, what would your experience was like being the first woman? What did you get some flack or?
Well, you know, men always start to test you. You know, they want to know if you know as much as they know, and are you a threat to them, and so on. So you really have to know your subject well, not only in the training class, but throughout. I mean, you know, people would come in and say, well, who's that? I decided that in order to be different, other than the secretaries, I would go in with a hat and a brooch, a big brooch, so that I looked different, and I never took the hat off all day. So whoever walked in said, who's that? And it made a big difference because I wasn't taken for a secretary, and you know, they made me feel equal. It was difficult. Women were worse than men, believe it or not. The secretaries were jealous, and it was very difficult to get through the secretaries because they felt put out.
Interesting.
But I did very, very well. I finally made it to the only woman on the management advisory board of Hornblower Weeks, the firm that I worked for in New York.
How many years did that take you from the time you started?
About 5 years.
About 5 years.
Yeah,
okay.
About 5 years, yeah.
Okay, now, interestingly, when you started in 1962, the women's liberation movement hadn't really started yet. We were still sort of in the civil rights movement. It wasn't until, I guess, maybe the late 1960s that we really had, well, more interest or energy coming out of the women's liberation movement. So who were your mentors or who supported you when you were sort of out there all by yourself?
No one. I really didn't even know that I was in the women's movement. All I was interested in was making a living because I had three children. And I needed to help feed them.
How old were the kids? How old were your kids when you did that?
At that time, I had two sons. One was born in 1954.
Okay, so he was about seven or eight.
Seven or eight. The other one was five or six, and then I had a two-year-old.
Oh wow!
So they were little kids, and they I had to get a wife to take care of them.
Who'd you hire as your wife? I'm just curious.
I did have to get a housekeeper to take care. Yeah. Well, I was earning money, and so long as I was earning money, I had to put some of it to the care of the children. And that's one of the things I always tell women: if you're going to go to work, you must take care of the children. They have to have good help.
But I do see you have a chapter here, Bullies and Decisions. So I mean, what was that chapter about? Is that about some of the, you know, sterner, more difficult
moments? Yes,
yeah,
yes.
So
yeah, the book walks you through how I perceived and how I was looked at, and and how I developed clients, because clients would call me and say, oh, you must be selling cosmetics from home. And I said, no, no, I'm a stockbroker. No, there are no lady stockbrokers, you know. And they were right, they weren't. And there was one lady that was an analyst. There were a couple of analysts that did make it out of college and were able to work for the major firms and analyze the different companies. And I relied on them a great deal.
But in terms of cold calling and so on, you were basically soliciting men, correct, to be customers? Because women didn't really have their own assets?
Only men.
Only men. Okay.
Only women. Women, single women, had no money. They had no bank accounts. They had no credit cards. We did not. And I was working for Hornblower, and they wouldn't let me open a brokerage account because I was a female. So I went to my manager. I said, isn't this ridiculous? I said, you trained me. I know about the brokerage business. You pay my salaries, and you're not going to open an account for me? He says, well, you know, we have we must have your husband sign on. I said, forget about it. My husband's having his own problems. And they did finally allow it. And I said, now I'm going to be soliciting women. I can't tell them to come and we can't open an account. What am I doing with them? But most of my clients were men. Yes.
Did you at some point, though, start soliciting more women?
Absolutely. I started talking to different clubs. We started these investment clubs for women because they didn't have that kind of money. You know, a lot of them were working women, and some of them were single. And they didn't have the money to go into large investments. So we did do the clubs, and those worked out fairly well. They learned about the market. They had people investigating different companies. And they really, really ended up being some of my best clients.
Well, you should have got chummy with Leona Helmsley. She has a few bucks back in the day, right? So. Anyway, Dan, I think we're coming up on another break. So right after news, sports, and weather, we'll come back with more It's Your Money and Your Life right after this. Hey, stay tuned. We're back with the second half of It's Your Money and Your Life, and over to Richard to thank all of our wonderful sponsors.
Thank you to all of our wonderful sponsors. Of course, lovely La Vie. Thanks again for the Sunset Suite that I'm staying in this evening, so I don't have to get up too early to go run my race tomorrow. I'm missing the sunset because now that it sets earlier, I have to do radio instead. But just down the street from Lovely Lovely, and thanks again to Tammy for coming in. UBS, Mr. Michael Carranza is actually here in, well, I was going to say in studio, but it's not really a studio that we're in. It's in a really nice office.
Yes, right off La Sala Lounge.
La Sala Lounge. But Michael Carranza and Drew Freitas with UBS, thank you very much. You couldn't do it without you gentlemen. Rich Gaines with Family Legacy Legal, best estate planning attorney in town. Also our favorite CPAs, Don Epic CPA and Paul Polito CPA, Polito Epic Associates. Joe, did you know that all three of those guys are going to be our guests next week? So we're going to need five microphones. I thought I'd tell you now.
Oh, my gosh. We better
figure something out. Joel Grushkin with Cost Segregation Initiatives, helping real estate owners improve their cash flow. Our favorite new daddy, Jason Kruger, CPA with Signature Analytics, the best CFO service here in San Diego. My dear friend Carl Sheeler with Business Valuations, helping businesses and business owners improve the value of their businesses. And last but not least, right across the street, just had lunch with these gentlemen yesterday, Steve Sefton and Sean Puckett, the best business bankers in San Diego, with our sponsor, Regents Bank. Joe, how can our listeners find out more about our great sponsor?
Well, if they just get over to iymoney.com and click on the sponsors tab, all their information is there, phone numbers, emails, everything else, and all wonderful colleagues of you, right, Richard? You've been working with them for several years, right?
Several would be an understatement.
So, in other words, they're all excellent like you. We don't let anybody.
We've all grown old together.
That's right. We don't get them out of the phone book. They're all close.
Boy, that's for sure we don't. I don't know
if there is any phone books left, but anyway.
No, they all do great work. In fact, yes. I'm working with about five of them right now in different cases and different things. Can you believe that?
And what a great show last week with a CEO of the banker here talking about how they helped him grow his business. I mean, that's
really neat show to have a real-life business owner in who's growing rapidly, second fastest-growing company in San Diego, ITAV Solutions, Joe DeBona. Thanks to Sean Puckett with Regents Bank for arranging that. That was really a lot of fun.
It was great, and that was, especially since he was flat on his back after the 08 downturn, and now he's back doing terrific work, Joe DeBona. So congrats to him.
Yeah, neat company, and that was a neat radio show.
Mm-hmm. But tonight is neat also. So welcome back to Norma Yeager, who wrote Breaking Down the Walls. The book was just released in July. You can probably get it on Amazon, right, Norma?
Yeah.
And you've got a website yourself, normayager.com, correct?
I certainly do. And please spell the name properly.
Yeah, the name is Y-A-E-G-E-R. Y-A-E-G-E-R. So old Dodger fans, remember Steve Yeager, the Dodgers catcher? He didn't know how to spell because he was a baseball player. Norma spells it the right way, Y-A-E-G-E-R. Okay?
And of course, if Steve was on the show tonight, he'd be spelling it the right way, right, Richard? So. Anyway, normayager.com with Y-A-E. Get over there. Order a book. It's terrific. 50 years of at the forefront of the women's movement, the first woman on the New York Stock Exchange.
So, Norma, do you do a lot of speaking now because you've got the book out?
I am going to be doing quite a bit of speaking at different clubs, and as a matter of fact, I've just booked three of them.
Wow. Well, today you were up in Calabasas. So
I was doing book signing there for people that bought the book.
Did the Kardashians come by?
No, not today.
Not today, okay. Because they stayed here last summer. It was a big deal.
Yeah.
It really was. I don't know why, but it was.
But as a break, Norma did say she had dinner with Marion Ross, who is, I think, a San Diego native, correct? Who
absolutely.
Who's gone on to great success in the entertainment field. So you're good friends with her, correct?
Well, her accountant brought it to me. That's how she became my client, and we developed a relationship. She's a wonderful woman, and I did handle her pension plan. So I guess I did well. She's still talking to me.
I guess so.
Norma, being the first woman on the floor, how did you develop relationships primarily with men to entice them to become customers? I mean, did that take a long time? Lots of phone calls, lots of meetings, or was it really fast?
It's called cold calling, and they teach you that in the training program.
Okay.
You must cold call. You have to call. I did walking. I was located on Park Avenue on 50th Street across from the Waldorf. Loads of buildings there with clients, And I made friends with the secretaries because they're the ones that open the door to the bosses.
They're the gatekeepers.
So you have to learn to become friendly with the women, even though, you know, they resented the fact that I was a woman broker, but they did like the idea that I approached them first.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't go directly to the boss.
Mm-hmm.
I started off with the secretary and tried to get friendly with them.
And if they said no, you just meet the boss in another
If they said no, I tried again.
Okay.
And it's called perseverance.
Well, there you go.
I persevered. Mm-hmm. And I got an awful lot of clients that way because they opened the doors for me.
Excellent.
And then, of course, phone calls. But I never called at home. One call I made to a gentleman at home in the evening because I couldn't reach him during the day. And I got a third degree from his wife. So I realized that was not the thing to do.
That makes sense.
Okay.
So you've got a talking point that's called six traits every successful businesswoman must have. Do you want to talk about those?
I can do that, of course. The six traits that I always talk about is education, number one. You really have to know what you're doing, what you're selling, what you're putting out there. You have to have the ambition to do it because it does take perseverance. And if you don't have the ambition, you're going to give it up quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, you have to have a goal. You have to know where you want to go and try to plan out how to get there. I didn't know I was going to be a stockbroker, although I did have banking and finance in my college when I went to the School of Finance. So I did have accounting, and I had all of those things, and I knew that with a little bit more education from my analysts, I'd learned how to analyze a company and mm-hmm. knew how to read those sheets. And then you have to have a strong desire to want to do this particular job because it's not easy to get out there and to try to beat the sidewalks or, now it's a telephone and the computers. We didn't have computers,
mm-hmm.
so it was telephone, party lights.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, it was, just talking to people. I would mm-hmm. go into a drugstore and talk to the owner, and before you know it, we were talking stock.
Mm-hmm.
What do you like? What do you buy? And so on.
Mm-hmm.
And people around you are potential clients. Everybody's a potential client.
Mm-hmm.
The stock brokerage business is a lot of fun because it's constantly changing. You know, the prices change, mm-hmm. stocks change, and so on. So there's a lot of feelings that you have there that you can go out and talk to people about almost anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved it. I mean, it was the 50 years of one of the most exciting times of my life. And then, of course, you have to feel independent. That's mm-hmm. very important. You have to know that you are doing the right job. If you're not feeling independent and you want somebody else to tell you what to do, you're not going to make it.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have your own feelings, your own desires, your own thoughts, and you have to push forward
mm-hmm.
and be independent.
Mm-hmm. I thought you were going with an acronym for Jaeger here, because I see why. Of course, it's YEA, but maybe you could think about that. Take your name and put your 6 points together.
That could go down the line.
So you were in the business then for about 50 years, approximately?
Approximately, yes. I started, as I said, as the trainee, but I had schooling. I went for banking, I went for finance, and so on. So I learned about the economy and so on. So I had the education. Then, of course, I stayed in New York for 10 years with the same company. And then I met my husband, Dr. Jaeger. It was a second marriage. We had previously divorced my first husband,
mm-hmm.
and he and I decided that California was probably a better place for us
mm-hmm.
to raise our children.
Mm-hmm.
He had two and I had three, and that made five children to have to raise.
Wow.
And New York was terrible at that time.
Sure.
We had strikes all over and so on. So we decided to change. I went to my firm and I said, we're planning to go to California. I'd like to transfer within the firm. Would you allow me to do that?
Mm-hmm.
And they called the Beverly Hills office. I guess they said good things about me because they accepted me immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And they allowed me to transfer. And in fact, they bought my book, which means my clients, instead of having all the brokers kind of attack them, they didn't. They hired another broker. And part of the commissions that he earned, I was able to get. So they actually gave me a salary and my commissions, and that gave us the opportunity to start with income.
Wow. Yeah. And what year was that?
1972.
72. Great. That's the year Johnny Carson moved this show out to the
That's right. That's right. That's the year that
we just had his nephew on the show. He was a producer on the show. We'll talk to you more about that afterward, yeah. but that was fun.
So the business is a lot different now than it was 50 years ago.
It's a totally different business.
I mean, algorithmic trading.
And oh, my God.
High-frequency trading. Yeah.
High-frequency trading.
Well, you know, we went last Thursday. I think some of the computers just died.
Right. Like, yeah. Crash kind of thing.
It was a crash.
They
yeah.
crashed. Yes, they crashed. I saw a program, and the speed that they are doing these transactions scares me because yeah. you get one problem.
Yeah, milliseconds.
We had it in May, if you remember. Mm-hmm. We had a day where the market went down 600 points in seconds.
Yeah.
And it was a problem with the computer. Yeah. So it's not my career anymore. I thank God I don't have to deal with that.
The market must have a lot of foreign money in it, don't you think? Because it's about 50% of American family. Is that still the percentage, or has it dropped at all, who have holdings in the market?
I think there's probably more than that. You know, when I had my company, I also do international trades with mm-hmm. Japan and so on. And they also had the same. They wanted pension plan investments. They mm-hmm. had mutual funds that invested overseas. Mm-hmm. I don't know what they're doing today about the public. Is mm-hmm. the public involved? Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Well, the largest investor in the domestic stock market today is the Norway Oil Pension Fund.
It's the pension funds that
Norway,
are doing
though.
It. Yeah,
yeah.
yeah.
But they've got
Norway.
So much money because of oil.
Do you think we're over 15,000 now? Would you consider that a bubble or just part of the business cycle, or are we going to go up?
Well, I was going to ask, what was the Dow at when you started?
Yeah.
Do you remember?
Probably
4,000.
I can't even remember that, but I can tell you what the volume was.
Michael Caronte, do you remember? Well, you weren't old
62?
Enough, but I mean, do you read this stuff?
What do you think? What
was the market back in the early the Dow? How much? High 50s or low 60s?
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
It's unbelievable, isn't it?
Where's that wine, Tammy?
I was going to say.
Let me tell you a story that yeah. will be very interesting with the women's
okay.
movement.
Okay.
When they had passed the affirmative action law, mm-hmm. I said, well, oh, my goodness, this is an opportunity for me. So I opened a second firm, Yeager Capital Markets. It was different than Yeager Securities, mm-hmm. which was retail. And I said, well, this is an opportunity for me as a female owning a firm. They don't have that many. So I went to CalPERS, the largest pension plan in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I don't know if he'll ever see me, but I'm going to knock on that door.
It's a school teacher's pension fund, right?
Mm-hmm. No, CalPERS is a public employee.
Public employees.
Yeah. I'm thinking CalSTRS. I'm
CalSTRS.
Sorry. You're right.
I had them too, but this was my first one. That was
okay,
the first
CalPERS,
one.
California employees.
And I made the appointment, and I finally, you know, I left early, make sure that I didn't have a problem in the, you know, flying into Sacramento was terrible. So
yeah.
I made sure I got there the day before so that I wouldn't get caught, you know,
traffic.
Without... They had fogs, a lot of fog, and the planes...
That's a bad airport.
It's a bad airport. So I made sure I got there. Anyway, I made the appointment, and I arrived, and I was scared to death because here's this, you know, the manager of the biggest pension plan in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And I walk in. I made sure I was prepared. I walk in, he takes one look at me, he says, thank God you're here. He says, I didn't know where we were going to find a female that owns a decent firm.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
By that time, of course, I was 20 years operating a firm.
Mm-hmm.
He said, come in, I want to introduce you to the gentleman that gives out the orders and so on.
So this was like 74, 75? What year was this?
No, this was about 1980.
80, okay.
80, 81 mm-hmm. at that time. And I went in and I met the gentleman, and they became my first big pension plan client because of the affirmative action.
Wow.
And of course, now it gave me courage to go. I went to all of the pension plans in mm-hmm. the country. I traveled all over the United States to the public pension plans of the different states.
That is great. Thank you, Billie Jean King.
So.
Hey, we have to take another break right now, though. We'll be right back with more It's Your Money and Your Life with Norma Yeager right after this. Hang on. We are back for our last segment, live from La Vie, with Norma Yeager, the first woman on the New York Stock Exchange. We only have a few minutes left, so what are we going to cover, Richard?
Well, I notice whenever we come back in, our producer says that we're hot, and I'm just thinking that, well, Bob Filner got in a lot of trouble for saying that, but anyway. I guess we're going to have a new mayor within about 90 days.
And we'll have the new mayor on our show, too.
We're going to have the new mayor on our show.
We're good at that. We like to get the mayors.
We already know who's going to be elected, but we can't say.
We've had the last two mayors on. Richard. So we got a good streak going.
So, Norma, here's my question. The women's rights movement these days seems to center around things like choice and birth control and the right to abortion. And I think all of that is great. I've got two daughters, so I tend to be very liberal on social issues. But I think a lot of young ladies these days don't quite realize the shoulders of the people that they're standing on and how much more there is to this gender equality thing than just, issues surrounding children or birth control. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, thank God for the affirmative action that allowed me to go ahead as a woman and break into the pension plan business. And today you have so many of these candidates that are out there that are not for women.
You mean political candidates?
Yes, political candidates, excuse me. And when I listen to them, I say, how on earth can a woman vote for that particular party? He's against women. He's against your liberties. He's against your health. He's against everything. And they don't vote for their own benefits. I can't tell you how many women, when I ask them, what do you think about what this gentleman said? He said, oh, I don't know. It's not my problem. It is your problem. It's your problem. Whether you are, whether you have to worry about birth control is one thing, but the violation of your body, I think, is awful that they are now talking about.
Well, I think I'm a libertarian on this. I honestly think it's the woman's, her sole decision along with her family, her minister, whomever, her doctor, and it's none of my business, and I don't think
here's the thing, Joe. There's always powers that be to try to take back ground that's already been covered. There was an attack on Title IX about 10 years ago.
Well, they're trying to backtrack.
In the Bush administration.
I really feel bad for the young.
I'll mention names.
The gals in the teenage sector, I mean, they're the ones that are really, get caught up in this, and It's unfortunate. I think about a third of the states have you need notification from one or both parents or permission from one or both parents. So they've tried to, really.
It's a different way of attacking
Roe v. Wade.
Roe v. Wade. But 1973, Roe versus Wade.
Mm-hmm.
So, Norma, do you have any tips for women who are attempting to balance family and career?
I certainly do. I think, as I said before, one of the things that I needed to do was hire a wife. You must have good care for your children. You can't do a good job with your work if you're worried what's happening to your children at home. So take some of that money you're earning and get some help. Mm-hmm. If children are going to school during the day, then they should have somebody home when they get into the house again. So that's one of the important things that I think should be done. Also, when you have children, you have to budget. You have to know what money coming in, what's money going out, your time, your budget, everything else, and stick to it. Budgeting comes in with your time because you want to give 100% to your job and you want to be there for your children 100% for your home as well. I think you have to have the cooperation of a husband. If you have a husband, it's extremely important that he is involved in what you're doing, what your decisions are, and make sure that he helps you with the household as well. Or put some of his money to work and get yourself some house helping as well.
Or get a new husband.
Which I did.
There you go. You gotta keep doing till we get it right.
So
many people have to do that. So we're coming in on the home stretch though here.
Yeah,
so any other important points that you'd like to make as we wrap up here, Norma?
Well, again, I think you want to mention that you're on Amazon.com and it's Norma Yeager, YAEGER.com, because you want to sell a lot of books by being on the show.
Yeah.
Just about every bookstore should be carrying my book.
I agree, they should.
For it.
Yeah. And also it's available on Amazon, correct? So But we have to wrap right there. Norma, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Hey, Joe, can we thank UBS again? Drew Freitas and Michael Quaranta.
We can thank them till we're blue in the face, for gosh sakes.
Because they do such a great job of supporting us. So. And Michael was in here cheering us on the show.
Yeah. So anyway, Richard, thank
you. Wondering why we don't give him wine.
Yeah, have a great week. Enjoy your stay here, Norma and Richard at La Vie. And thank you to Mark DiBella and La Vie. Thank you to
Craig Blanke, Dave Sniff.
Well, Craig Blanke, our co-executive, Dan Noon in studio, our sound engineer, making us sound great. And to Dave Sniff, our programming genius at KFMB. And to all of you out there, you have a real great Saturday night weekend.
Go Eastlake.
Go Eastlake, and we'll see you next week. Take care. Good night.